Now, this is one of our nesting boxes. It's kind of too much in your face, but those eggs are the size of jelly beans, and they're from a house wren. And when I was checking the nest, I said to Maria, I said, bring your camera. I said, you got to get a picture of this. So she came out, and that nest is about 7 to 8 inches tall, and it's packed with all of those twigs. And that little wren, I don't know how long it takes her to do it, but she fills that sucker up to the top because a swallow can't get in there, a bluebird can't get in there. And some years, when I take the nests out in the fall, the bottom nest is a bluebird that started nesting. But a swallow came along and bullied the bluebird out. So the bluebird left, and the swallow starts putting its swallow feathers in, and the wren comes along and says, look, it's mine. And she will pack that box right to the top. And she will even pack boxes and not lay eggs in them just because she wants her privacy. So those little jelly beans, most people would look at those and they'd say, very insignificant, very, very small. So if I had showed you this picture first, would you have said, those are ostrich eggs? Because they look really big, don't they? They're not. They're just a close-up of those little jelly bean eggs. And I believe that that mother wren looks at her eggs as if they're like ostrich eggs. And hey, folks, these are really important. And there again, as a farmer, we have to look at nature and say, these things are important. We had these folks come and visit us from Missoula, Montana. The boy was 7, the girl was 8. They had never been on a farm before. The parents had never been on a farm before. And I told Marie, I said, how long are they staying? And they were friends of our sons. And he said, 4 days. And I said, well, I said, I don't think they're going to last more than a day if they've never been on a farm. So West Edmonton Mall, you're probably going to have to take them up there, show them some fun. Well, I thought I'll get it over with. So I took the kids and their parents out, and I showed them how this is where the laying hens are, and they're gathering eggs. But I showed them the whole shoot and match of the farm, and went in, and the next morning, actually it was that morning, for breakfast, they gathered the eggs, and they've never held an egg before, probably out of their mom's fridge or dad's fridge, but took them in, we washed them, hydrogen peroxide, that gets rid of any problems on the eggs, took them into Marie cracked them, put them in a bowl, and these eggs, because the chickens are on pasture, are a brilliant yellow. And they said, what's that? And I said, well, that's what the beta carotene that's in the grasses goes into the eggs. Those eggs are high in an essential fatty acid that we need for good health. So then she scrambled them, and they ate them. Well, they did go to West Edmonton Mall, but when they got back, they said, can we come and do chores with you? And they did chores with me for 3 days. And there again, this reminds me of Glenn's talk about last child in the woods. I think we're very close, if things keep happening the way they are, that families will no longer have the opportunity to take their children to a farm, because it's really a challenge for small farms. I'm sure the big industrial model will have an old McDonald's farm that you can go and pet, but you won't be able to get into the big operation. So this was a real wake-up call for me, how important it is to have families come to the farm. And Sunday afternoons, it's open house, and we get anywhere from 150 to 200 people between May 1st and the end of September. And guess who? Some of the rebels from Augustana. And Dittmar told me to talk about hope. Well, the pictures of wildlife, those give me a lot of hope. And since I've been coming to Augustana, and since you guys have been coming to our farm, I told Allison today, I said, my glass is usually half full, but since I've been meeting you people, it's 3/4 full. Because I was at a place in my life, even once we got moving on the change in our farm, as to how we're farming, is like, how do we move this? Like, who are the rest of the people? Where's the rest of the army? And to hear and to see what you guys are doing, I am overwhelmed. And I'm thinking, as an old guy, if I can hang on to some of the high ground for a bit longer, you guys are going to come and you're going to bring it all back. So we are blessed to be able to work with you and to email and chat with you off and on. This reminds me This is where we get our hogs and our beef processed at Forsberg. And it reminds me of, I can't remember the year, Detmar, but you and Carson put on a relearning community series in Viking. And that is one of the things that we have to do in every community in this province, is relearn community. We have forgotten what community is, and I think you did about 6 or 8 sessions, and there was there was maybe 20, and then there were 54, and the community buzzed for about a year. And some change has happened because of those relearning series, but somehow we need to find the energy and the willpower to continue to do that, because Margaret Wheatley, one of my favorite quotes from her is that she said, when people get together and talk about what they really care about, change happens. And that's what happened with our watershed group. That's what's happening in communities where they're having these relearning community series where they bring people in. And that's one of the good, really good memories I have about starting to get back to being a community again. And this is a family-run operation. Two brothers own it, and it's for sale. They are booked up now till the middle of January. So you're saying, if it's that successful, why is it for sale? Well, the oil and gas industry is paying big wages. Forsberg is close to a coal mine. Some of the older guys are retiring, so new people who may have been working here are moving from a job that maybe pays $15 an hour. I don't know what they get paid, but they're moving into the plant or into the mine where they're getting maybe $25 or $30 an hour. So when you have prosperity, food security, the local economy starts to suffer. And the owners are really stressed out because they will train somebody painstakingly to cut the roast the way you want it, the thickness of the pork chop you want. But if that person says, hey, I won't be back tomorrow because I'm heading out to drive a water truck and they're going to pay me $39 an hour. So we really have to rethink and relearn community. And I should probably wrap up. And I kind of had a struggle. Was I going to quote Leopold or Wendell Berry? And I just chose Leopold. And this is one of my favorites because it's about the way I started out. I abused the land because I regarded it as a commodity belonging to me. But when I saw the land as a community to which we belong, I began to use it with love and respect. And that's where it is. And I guess if you've got any questions or if you have to get out of here, one or the other. Okay.
I was wondering about the solar powered watering that you have for the cattle.
Yeah.
The main purpose of that, correct me, I guess, is that you're protecting the water supplies by bringing the cattle away from the water so that they don't defecate in.
Number one. And that's, after I took holistic management, that was the main reason we got the solar pumping system, because I thought the manure and the urine from the cattle is going to compromise the water quality. That was only part of the picture. When I met Cows and Fish and they started to explain to me about what a riparian area is, all these grasses, all these trees growing, well, if you could have seen our riparian area before I used the solar pumping system, there was no vegetation, because when the cattle come to drink, they slide in and they shear off the grasses, they shear off the trees, they shear off the Saskatoons. So pretty soon, if you look around that 7-acre wetland, it's all dirt, or it's all mud. So what else happens is, when they get into that mud, they can get foot rot, which is, there's viruses, there's bacteria in the water, and if they have a cut in their foot, they get that, it's a staphylococcus virus, and you have to treat them with medication. And since we're farming organically, as soon as you treat an animal with medication, it goes out of the organic program and you sell it on auction market. So and the other thing about the solar pumping system is that we rotational graze. So all of our pastures, so in a quarter section we've got 8 20 acre pastures. So if I'm, this year we grazed 150 cattle, so I give them 100 feet by 200 meters. And I move them sometimes twice a day, sometimes once a day. And so, and the water tank is there, so the manure and urine They eat the grass in that paddock, but everything, the waste goes back in that paddock. So if in that corner the grass is growing poor, or maybe there's some weeds growing, I take my salt blocks and I put them over there. I take the mineral feeder and I put it over there. So, and I take some grass seed and I just throw it around, so the cattle, when they go to lick the salt, when they go to lick the mineral, the hoof action pushes some of that grass seed into the ground. But when they're walking from there over to the water tank here, they're lifting their tail and they're fertilizing it as they come. But if we had one watering system right in the middle of a quarter section, what happens is when one animal goes to drink, the rest of them, it's herd mentality, they all start to go away. So what happens is there's only so much room at the trough. So the ones that are waiting, they're lifting their tail. And if you do I've seen aerial maps of vegetation growth. And if you've got the dugout in the middle, it's like a donut. And all the grass is growing fantastic towards the middle. But as you get out towards the margins, it's very poor, and the weeds are starting to take over. So we're using animals as a tool. Like, we've had pieces of land where when we seed the pasture, there are noxious weeds, in other words, really bad weeds, like Sentinus chamomile is one of them. And so when I would find a patch of these, when the grass starts to grow, I would take my electric fence and fence it off and put my 200 or 300 head of cattle in there, and I'd leave them there for an hour. And this is on this is maybe half an acre to an acre. And I'd leave it for half an hour, and I'd come back, and the grass would be all gone, and they'd be starting to eat the flowers off the Sentinus chamomile. So I'd leave, and I'd come back, and when they see me, they're bawling, they want to move, and the stems are starting to disappear. And I'd leave again, because I'm tough, eh? And I'd come back in 2 hours, and they were pulling some of the stems and the roots out of the ground. So I said, okay, time to move back to the buffet. So what happens is, next year, very few of those Sentinus chamomile come back. So I do that 2 years in a row, and we've got the weeds beaten.
Okay, so you don't use goats for that then?
It's an option, but I don't get along with goats. Your question brought up something else that I wanted to mention, and that is that when we farm the conventional way, the knowledge and wisdom came from the registered seed grower, the guy that sold the company, or the salesman that sold the chemicals, that sold the fertilizer. So that was where we went to get the information, as well as workshops. Today, the way we farm, we talk to ecologists, we talk to biologists, we talk to riparian specialists, we talk to agroforestry people, we talk to people like Glenn, who has a background in ornithology. Those are the people now who we consult with to get the decisions about how should we be working in harmony with the ecosystem so we can maximize production. So it's a whole paradigm shift. Yeah, and it all comes back
to...
Can
you just repeat the question, because the majority of the speak daughter, but mother's a good fan running in this place. That
well,
that
I was just curious. I know, like, how do they do rip up the riparian zone, but why they do that as native ungulates don't do that, if that's just because they're a large herd and because they're domesticated?
It's the herd thing. I check the custom grazed cattle anywhere from 3 to 6 times a day. So I start to see their patterns, and I'm learning more about people from watching the cattle. So, like I say, when somebody starts heading for the water tank, you can just see it. It's like a magnet, and they all start to go. So if they're drinking from the creek, what happens is they'll follow that first one, and then they'll line up on this side, they'll line up on that side, and if they can't get in, well, 150 head of cattle, say 3 feet for each one, that's 450 feet. All of a sudden, if they start doing that all the way along the creek, they're shearing all the vegetation. And if you calve your cows next to a creek, baby calves, when they defecate, they have cryptosporidia in their manure. And when that gets into the water and gets into the stream, I think it was North Battleford, had that problem shortly after Waterton, or Walkerton, where they found Cryptosporidia in the water. And there again, the land ethic. I'm a farmer. I think it's incumbent upon me to take responsibility for my cattle so that we can keep that water clean. And I think that if we look at all the landowners along the creek, whether it be grain farmers or cattle people, that if we all take responsibility and develop a land ethic, the town or the village or the city downstream, they're not going to have to use as many expensive chemicals that are, you know, maybe possibly toxic to us. And it all starts with just making that decision to take responsibility.
Do you know of any community-supported agriculture projects near the area that practice holistic methods like you do?
Well, I know Brian Rosemahel, Viking Farm. He's been working at it. And I think they're slowly moving towards being organic. So if they're going to move towards being organic, you definitely want to use holistic principles, because you can't use any chemicals if you're going to be organic. So, but other than that, I'm not familiar.
Well, is the question in that area or in general?
I'm just curious.
Because a lot of Brian, all those people so are close to Pinoca. Ola started about the same time as you did, or Brother Brian, Ella Thompson, though, I guess.
Oh, gee.
It's a while back, but anyhow, so she was a woman farmer. Her one of her boys is on the farm now, I think, right? So there are various ones in the area, but it's still a little oasis. I mean, that's one would be nice if the neighbors and the neighbors, right? Then the birds would love it.
Yeah.